We want to start off with a little exercise today. And I'd like to do a breathing exercise, and then I'd like to give you a test. And it's a very simple test, but I think it would illustrate later on in some of the things we want to emphasize. So I'd like everybody to get as comfortable in your chair as you possibly can. I would suggest that you uncross your legs and release all of the pressure points. I would suggest that you close your eyes. I would suggest you sit your coffee cups down and anything that's in your hands. I would suggest that you take your right or left hand, whichever is the most sensitive, and put it on your stomach or just below your diaphragm. Because I want you to feel yourself breathe. And I'm just kind of holding off. A couple people just walking in. Let me catch up. And I'd like you to take at least about 3 good full breaths. I want you to inhale. What did I do? I exhaled, didn't I? Okay. I want you to inhale and exhale 3 times, but good deep ones, and let it out. Now, it's kind of hard to feel with your eyes open. You want to focus. Don't go to sleep. Okay, now for the fourth one. I want you just to feel with your hand, breathe normal, and let your hand feel the process by feeling your diaphragm expand and contract. Okay. Now, normally I would ask a lot of questions, but we don't have about 50 minutes left, so I'm gonna talk about what your experience probably was like. And that is, as you were feeling here, just below your diaphragm, feeling the breathing process, the life process, the rest of your body became at peace, a kind of relaxed. If you had any other tension spots, I'm almost sure you felt the sense of ease or relaxation of that. And what I want to suggest to you today is just that easy to get rid of stress and tension if you attack it early. If you get in the habit of relaxing yourself, it's amazing what control that you can have over your own body. But most of us wait till things get too out of control and we're wiped out and we don't have time to count to 10, and therefore everything is out of whack. That's a simple exercise. That exercise, all of the meditation techniques, is predicated really on that basic exercise. And the principle is you can take charge of your body and give it direction. Anybody, give me a definition of stress. Any 4 people. Now, you know from yesterday, if you don't volunteer, what's going to happen?
Tension.
Anxiety.
Tension. Please, not one-worders. Give me a phrase, a sentence, a statement,
being
a description.
Being very tied up.
Being very tight up?
Tied up.
Tied up, okay.
Under pressure.
Being under pressure.
One would have having money worries.
Having money worries.
Tremendous stress.
Okay.
My son's report card.
Okay. 2 definitions. One of stress and one of something else that we use so closer to stress is called anxiety. Okay. The way I define stress is any any tension or anything that happens to you, emotionally or physically, that you are not emotionally or physically prepared to deal with, creates stress. It's a stress factor. If you're ready for it, then it's not stress. Why?
Because they know how to handle it, or they're handling it right.
And usually there's no resistance. In order for stress to to take place, there has to be some resistance. Now, unfortunately, I promise to give you two definitions. The other one is anxiety, and this is a little bit longer. A common anxiety, I have to interpret it, it got too long. And use some therapy terms. Anxiety is when your values are in conflict with your goals. When your values are in conflict with your goals, it creates tension. Anxiety. Unfortunately, both of those words have developed a very negative connotation in our society. Every time we use the word stress, we think what? Bad thing. Problems. What are some examples of stress that are not negative? Anybody?
Well, you're feeling a little bit of stress knowing a test is coming up, you're going to study. Prepare yourself for it.
So is that good stress or bad
stress? Good stress. I mean, I think of total stress would be just freezing up and not doing anything about it. But stress was as a motivator.
Okay.
Birth.
Giving birth.
Giving birth. I don't think the rest of us knew much about whether it was. Okay, giving birth. That's one of the examples on my sheet we're going to talk about. That's stressful? Tell me about that. It's a new experience for me.
To decide how you're going to spend that money. And it's also stressful. You expect to have more to spend, but you don't.
See, she mixed a positive with a negative. Okay. Anyone else?
Getting married.
Getting married. What's stressful about that?
When you're the mother of the bride, it's stress.
Unknown change.
Moving.
But you were asking
for good stress, weren't you? Or,
yes.
Yeah. Well, for instance, if you're anticipating a good time, maybe you're going to go to a football game and you think your team is pretty good and you think they're going to win and you're a little stressful about it, but it's a good stress because you're going to have fun with that.
Okay.
Any decision-making process could possibly bring on some stress, like a job change or a variety of different things. You could be under stress trying to make the right decision.
Okay. I need some. Yes, ma'am.
What you were saying that if you're something, it's something you're not prepared for. What if a policeman stops you?
You're not prepared for that.
And I'm not prepared for that. No, I didn't see the lights.
Guess what happens? The adrenaline rises and attention gets there, and
yeah. I can't talk.
And that's not good stress because you're going to get a ticket. No, something negative is going to happen.
Suppose you're retiring, suppose you're wondering what you're going to do with your life. I mean, once you say, okay, I don't have to go to work the next month, what am I going to do with my life? I mean, you regret it. Sometimes you can be scared of it.
Okay, is that good stress or negative stress? Positive and negative stress.
Well, sometimes I think sometimes you get more of a negative first, before you get a positive. Maybe.
The way you describe it, it becomes a negative stress because mm-hmm. it creates tension and hopelessness and fear.
One athletic event would be a positive stress, wouldn't it? And like track meets or
physical exercise,
you know, football game. If you're an athlete,
if you're an athlete and you're participating,
yeah,
and
that would be positive stress.
Only if you intend what?
To win. Mm-hmm.
And if you're pretty confident you're going to win, it's positive stress. But if you're concentrating on the other people in the lineup who are equally or who you're not sure is better than you are, it could be negative stress.
Retirement can be a positive stress.
Could be.
It can be because I retired. It was a thing because of disability, but I still retired, and I found it to relieve a lot of the.
Okay, but did you notice how she said that? I found it to relieve. Mm-hmm. But in the process.
I knew I was getting out because I knew that to get away from what I was doing was helpful for my knee.
Okay, so you had a positive.
I had a positive feeling about it.
Beautiful.
I didn't feel negative. I didn't feel like the world was going to crumble because I no longer was going to work anymore.
Okay. Give you a slightly different situation, and you need to perk your ears up and listen because you have to vote. Okay. And everybody's over 21 in here, right? Okay. You need to vote. I need you to decide which one of these would create the most stress. Okay. And it's a nice thing, something that most of us enjoy doing. Is there anybody in here who does not enjoy hugging? Raise your hand. We'll stone you. Okay. Huh?
You're threatening now.
Oh, yes. Okay. You have 5 questions. Okay. First question. Well, first statement in terms of stress. Which is most stressful? Hugging a person of the same sex. Number one. Hugging a person of the opposite sex. Number two. Hugging a child of a different race. Number three. Hugging an adult of a different race. Number four. Five. Hugging a person of the same race.
Of what?
Of the same race. Is yourself. Mm-hmm. Which is most stressful?
You have to vote.
You have to vote.
How about hugging?
None of them are stressful?
No.
None of them are stressful. Okay, how many of them, regardless, everybody who feel they're not stressful, raise your hand. Everybody who feel that none of them are stressful, raise your hand. Okay, now put your hands down and you cannot vote again, all right? Now the rest of you, which is the most stressful?
We have to answer the tough question.
Hugging a person of the opposite sex. Okay. Four. Hugging an adult of a different race. One, hugging a person of the same sex.
No, of the opposite.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, what?
That's two.
Oh.
Okay.
Same sex?
Hugging a person of the same sex.
I can see how.
Is that what you're voting for?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Same sex. So the men have something in common.
Are these strangers or are these people you know?
Question number seven. Okay. The thing that make it stressful And most of us, I'm sure, thought of it in a negative sense, because there was some element of risk and fear involved. Is that not true?
Not around here. You get so used to it, you don't think anything of it.
Okay, but several people felt that there was some stress. Okay. Yes?
I think it depends on what your condition is. If you around, like I say, if you're hugging everybody all the time, you're deconditioned or whatever. You're not stressed. It's not stressful. But if you're never hugging anybody and suddenly you're put in a situation you're supposed to hug somebody.
Okay, now I'm not suggesting that it is stressful for you. But I gave the situations, many people said it's not stressful at all. But then others identified areas that were stressful for them. So I'm not saying it is to you. But since you said it is, I'm going to follow my lesson plan. Okay. What made it stressful? What made it stressful?
Wondering what the other person would think of you.
Okay.
Well, what society would think of it.
Oh, it's called
okay. Fear. Anything else?
What other people think when you, if I come up and hug you, what do other people think?
What they think.
Right.
Not what I think.
Or what I think.
Okay.
Or what they think.
Okay. Okay. Most of the time, these fears that we have are sometimes we dress them up and we call them other things other than fears. Are nothing but preconceived or preconditioned values that we have. It's unfinished, unresolved feelings on most cases of inferiority within yourself. And so we determine what the outcome is going to be, and usually we determine it's going to be negative. Now I know in our society, we have all kind of hugging going on. There's been a lot of hugging here this weekend. And I'm sure the men that has hugged here this weekend, well I'm assuming that the men has hugged here this weekend, has not immediately been, their sexuality has been in question. And because of that, it appears, and probably other things, they have felt comfortable in doing it. Stress is a factor of our life experiences and our personal faith. What do we mean by that? God says to us in the scriptures that He wants to have us to have what kind of life?
Abundant.
An abundant life. And does that just have to do with finances?
No.
Now we'd like for it to start there. But it doesn't end there. What other things are involved in that?
Good health.
Friends.
Good health. Friends. Family.
Ice cream.
Ice cream.
Happiness.
Happiness, in another word that's closely associated with happiness, starts with a P.
Love.
Peace is the one I want. Pleasure is kind of nice too. But peace is what I want. Because when we have peace, we also seem to have freedom. Freedom to express ourselves. When we talk about the joy of stress, now I contend that these folks who said that all this hugging is not stressful, it is. But it's not negative stress. It makes you feel good. But everything that we do takes a toll on our life system, be it positive or negative. But we determine whether it is positive or whether it is negative. I want to use the example of childbirth because we have real extremes on that as being positive and negative. People who take, is it Lamaze?
Yeah.
And work at it faithfully, and their significant other is involved in the training and preparation process, and there's no other medical problems that would complicate the birth, have a stressful experience, but they also have a what kind of experience?
Joyful.
Joyful, pleasurable experience. What provided for that?
Preparation.
The support.
What do you mean the support?
The other partner and the teaching of the method, the support people around them that prepare them.
Okay, so well, we'll stick with support. Okay, support.
You also have control.
Tell us about that.
I taught Lamaze and I had great experience.
Then tell me. You're the one we want.
But by being prepared and having those extra techniques, you have some input into something that's, you know, you can't stop labor, which is the force that's, you know, creating a lot of tension, but you can do some positive things using some other techniques that are put you into control, and you can experience less pain and make it a great experience.
Yes. When there's absence of fear and there are elements of understanding and a feeling of control, the same pain becomes an element of pleasure and expectation. And even for the men, some of the research tells us that men who go, and I'm not sure I'm an advocate of Lamaze, because my wife screamed and hollered anyway. But even for men who go through the training, few of them faint in that delivery room. And of course, all of the TV programs and stuff always characterize the men as fainting in the delivery room, fainting in the waiting room, you know, and all this kind of stuff. A lot of that's true, because I've been there a lot. I don't have that many kids, but I've been with other folks. But the ones who were prepared and have a heightened expectation of something pleasurable taking place had a stronger endurance. And when they talk about the experience afterwards, it was joy. It was pleasure. It was exciting. And so much till many of them very quickly want to what? Do it again. No. There's a little group of islands just on the other side of the Panama Canal from here called the Sandblast Islands. And in the Sandblast Islands, the Kuna Indians live there. And it happens to be a matriarchal society. And it was the only place when we was on a vacation that you couldn't barter. When they say $50, it was $50. Them women didn't move an inch. But their approach to childbirth is rather unique. They live in huts, and they dig two holes in the hut, one corner of the hut, and they take these beautiful pieces of, I call it tapestry, but it's the things, you put them on the wall, and they're just beautiful. Frederick and Nelson's sell them for $75, $100, $250 kinds of stuff. It's the needlepoint stuff that they do. And one they cover nice with that, and the other one's bare. Molars. Yeah. And when it's almost time for the delivery, the young lady goes sit outside the door. And of course, the men have to leave. And when it's the moment of delivery, she comes back in and she squats over the hole that's not covered, that's covered, and deliver. And then the placenta and all this stuff is buried in another hole. And she gets up and clean up her baby and go back out, and everything is normal. Very little pain, very little, you know. And amazingly, they do not have a high mortality rate in any place. And it's psychological readiness for the process. And I use that one because we have in America emphasize the pain and anguish and stress associated with that.
Well, the mere surroundings, the posture of the woman on the table and so forth is very stressful.
Y'all scream at home.
The whole surround makes it stressful.
I remember when I watched, that used to come on Sunday evening when they had the brides come to the men who were out in the West and it's whatever that is. Well, y'all were screaming then. All they had was hot water and towels.
Yeah, but you still the same thing applies is that if you're in a sitting position
right.
with those labor pains, that pain is not going to be the same as when they stretch you out on that table. I don't care what you say.
That's right.
Your body's in a more normal position and you're able to participate.
In as much as most of you have more experience than I do.
Right.
To the voice of authority. But the concept is stress comes from not being ready, not having the positive expectations. An athlete that is not ready to run a race, that has not warmed up, what happens to him when you get out, him or her, when you get out there on the track?
It's a cramp.
Cramps.
Can't
ready.
Yeah, not ready. The body needs to be warmed up, it needs to be toned, it needs to be prepared. Some of you are suffering now because you walked up that hill. And you haven't done that kind of walking in hollow. And you wasn't ready, you wasn't. And you really wasn't expecting your body to feel any better. You knew when you left out of here. So you got what you was expecting to receive. Mentally and physically you were not ready. So we're talking about having a state of preparedness for the normal things that's going to happen to you in this life. We spoke in terms of weddings. We spoke in terms of childbirth. We spoke in terms of job promotions when it's something that we want and we see benefits in it. You know, positive expectations. And when those things come, we're excited about it. But anything that we think about, kill off some of the old gray matter. And create energy being used. And when energy is being used up, our body is doing what?
Working.
When our body is working, what's happening? It's wearing down. It's dying off. And that's what stress does to us. But if we prepare ourselves, we can begin to enjoy the process of wearing out. We talk about growing old how?
Gracefully.
And some people don't believe that's possible. And others are a testimony.
I'm a little bit confused. You said it takes from you the positive stress as well as the negative stress.
Both of them takes from you.
And so both, if you always had positive stress, your body's still going to wear out.
Sure.
But positive stress is, sure, I mean, I can't prepare myself for hugging you because I get so much out of it. How could you prepare yourself to avoid that kind of stress?
The preparation is the you're developing a value system that says that's good. By conditioning your environment to reinforce that kind of behavior. So when that happens, you don't have the fear that the folks in the back of the room is going to say, oh my goodness, what's wrong?
But I don't. That's what I'm saying.
You don't what?
I don't have that any fear of it.
Because you've conditioned yourself.
So then I really, there's really not as much stress, even the positive.
It's not negative.
Stress.
Negative stress has to do with the value that we put on it, not what it does to us. It's the value. You know, a young lady, that's a young fellow that's going to get married, there's a lot of tension, lots of confusion, but they are excited as all get out. And you feel good about it, unless there's a shotgun behind. You know? But in the point, when it's something by choice, and they want, and they see all this beautiful, all these beautiful things happening between them and for them, it takes its toll. They're exhausted. And some of y'all had such grandiose ideas for your wedding night. And guess what happened? You're worn out and went straight to sleep. It's too much activity, too much excitement, too much tension. It leads to fatigue and tiredness. But in a state of readiness for it and positive expectations, we don't have the negative connotation to what's happening. So when the scripture tells us that God wants us to have a rich, full, abundant life, he wants to have a life of peace, of internal peace. And that's the absence of. Same things happen to you, but you take control over the values that's on those things in your life. Just like women who take Lamans and men who participate in Lamans, just like the Kunik Indians and many other examples that we can come up with. So we determine the moral or the value that stress has on our lives. 2 Corinthians tells us, for if there be first a willing mind, and this has to do with giving, but it also has to do with anything you're involved in. If you're doing it with a desire, willingly, as opposed to under duress. Some of us have a lot of negative stress when we pay our tithes. And it just wipes us out. And others, when we pay our tithes, it's a joy. What's the difference? Positive expectations. That's all. The value that you put on
it. I thought you said taxes.
She said, yes, I wasn't going to touch that.
I thought you said taxes, and I thought, you're right on.
I wouldn't touch it.
What about with things that you could not have prepared? Well, maybe you, I don't know, but things that strike you out of the blue, you know, there's a terrible accident or a tragedy or a wartime. I mean, how do you make that into a positive thing?
One of the things I do with my daughters who are 11 and 15, and that is we talk about death. We talk about dying. We talk about the afterlife, which we strongly believe in, and what that means. I'm sorry. We talk about death and dying. We talk about the afterlife and what it means and the benefits of that. You know, my oldest daughter has had about 5 rabbits, and they all die within about 6 weeks. You know, I don't know what we do wrong. You know, but you know what? She wants another rabbit. We bury them. We discuss it. Now, you feel bad for a while because you don't have your rabbit, but you're not wiped out. You know, you're not disoriented and all the things we tend to go through. When my mother died, I think the worst thing for me was I was in Tacoma and she was in New Orleans. And so when I got there, that's when I began to go through the grieving process, because it really didn't crystallize that she was dead as long as I was physically here. You know, but I didn't have this grave sense of loss and this grave sense of absence, because death to me meant what?
She was at peace.
Yes.
Freedom.
Yes. And in a better place. Yes. So I was prepared. I was prepared. Now, did I shout hallelujah when she died? No. But was I distraught when she died? No. And so I feel good that she gained, even though I don't have her to hassle her, you know, like I used to do. And that's a sense of preparing ourselves for the unexpected. Because none of us really know where death is in terms of our family, in terms of, if it's yourself, it don't matter. But loved ones. But we prepare ourselves by taking a look at what does it mean? What are the benefits? Isn't that what many of us have been working for? To be with the Lord.
What does that mean, Lou, for grieving?
That means for grieving that the process becomes shorter and much more comfortable. You go through all of the stages, but you progress those stages much smoother and much faster. We are still human. I'm not suggesting that we are divine and we're going to eradicate feeling bad and feeling the absence of loss and feeling some anger and some hostility and feeling some blame and all this kind of stuff and feeling some if I had have been there kind of a things. Yes. But we all know people who've been grieving for the last 3 years. 6 months. But we all know some, at least I know some, that it's only been 3 months. And they begin to get things back into some kind of order. Yes, he's gone, but I know he would have wanted me to continue to live and live in a certain style. When he lay down at night, yes, they miss him. Sometimes they'll even cry. But it's not depression. It's not anxiety. You know, it's love. And that's different. But that comes with a readiness, a preparedness for natural things that will happen in this life. So when we talk about things that we plan and things that just come up on us, we can prepare for them. And it's exciting to be able to genuinely comfort yourself when something negative, quote unquote, as society sees it happen. It's positive not to go into these deep, have to go into these deep despairs. And it's great to be able to help the rest of the family see. Now, I contend that the only way that we can be able to do this, Philippians 4:13 tells us what? Anybody? I know we have some brilliant Bible scholars. And this is a very short verse. One of those easy to remember ones. Philippians chapter 4, verse 13. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Who can do it?
I
can do it. I can survive this. I can get through this. I can work through this. I can accomplish this. It's a mindset. It gets us ready for what? Anything. Because Christ has the ability to give me the strength to do what needs to be done, both physically and what?
Mentally
and emotionally. So I'm capable. I'm not that, you know, it irritates me when we talk about, and I know the Bible infers that, so I'm going to have to deal with that when I talk to him, I know. But it infuriates me when you talk about women as being the weaker sex.
The way they lugged these kids around and moved that furniture around and beat up on their husbands and stuff. Weak of sex. But I can do all things through Christ that strengthens me. Now, the only way we can get to the point of having that kind of affirmation in our lives that provides comfort, and that is to have a daily personal relationship with whom? And keep nurturing that relationship. And that tones us up. How? Just like the muscles get toned physically, that tones us up how? Emotionally and spiritually, to deal with the problems of life, the things that we label as stress. And if I can deal with it, and deal with it effectively, then it's not what?
Negative.
It's not negative. Why? Because I have control. I have power. It's working out. I recall when I was going to school, this college, not the first time, the second time. I told you about the first time. But the second time, I was working at a group home in Tacoma, and I worked from 11 at night to 7 in the morning, and I went to school from 8 in the morning to 2 o'clock, and I went to work at the drug and alcohol program at Fort Lewis from 3 o'clock to 10:45, because they let me off 15 minutes early, because it took me 15 minutes to get to my other job. And between jobs. On jobs.
In class.
No, never in class. The first time around taught me a lesson about sleeping in class. But many people said, well, how do you do that? Well, actually, it was easy. I had a made-up mind that it was going to be done. And one of my favorite supports were Philippians 4:13. And I wasn't relying on myself to do it. I was relying on the reinforcement of the strength that only God can give to get that job done. And guess what? It worked. Yes, ma'am.
Well, my question is, there are things in life that create stress that you would have a very difficult time trying to find some way to think positively about. And I'm...
Give me a second.
So I have a son that's psychotic. I don't find an easy way to deal with that stress. I don't find an easy way to say, this is okay that he's going to go into a hospital. But, I don't know how to find an answer that I can accept that's okay with it. Why is he that way?
I'm not suggesting that you will have answers to all of the whys, but I'm speaking in terms of your ability to do and deal with and work at meeting his needs and feeling positive about the fact that I'm able to provide him what he needs in the state that he's in.
That's, so it has nothing to do with his state. It has to do with how you're helping him at the state he's in right now. You don't think about the fact that he's got all these problems. I mean, you don't dwell on that or something. You don't think about that.
The focus would be in preparing yourself to deal with what is. And if that's a given, then that your readiness and your ability to deal with it, your availability to deal with it, whatever resources you might have to deal with it, and deal with it in a healthy or prosperous, positive perspective would be the focal point. And I know many people, I don't know you, Simon, and know you, but I know many people with children who have deformities and medical conditions, and I know quite a few kids as a result of drugs effect, especially most recent. Well, LSD used to be really the most dangerous, and now crack is the most dangerous, and it's almost an instant psychotic type behavior and brain damage kinds of stuff. And there's a difference between parents who come to the place that, hey, I am doing all I know and can do, and I'm servicing my kid to the best I can. Yes, there is hurt or anguish to that this state exists, but the real stress comes when you cannot see hope in what you're doing and in your role. And sometimes, depending on how it happened, based on what we talked about yesterday, one of the first things we have to do is take a look at ourselves and kind of identify, hey, am I blaming myself for that state? Am I having some guilt reactions that maybe somehow I did, or if I had done thus and so, then this would not have happened? And one of the things we need to do, even if we come up with some yes answers, we need to forgive ourselves, because that's history. And then look to doing all that we can within our resources to address the problem that exists. And that gives us strength to do what needs to be done and to feel good in the process. And that's the focal point. You know, it's not going to eradicate all of the negative things that happen in this life, but it makes us more prepared to deal with it and deal with it with positiveness and a sense of celebration that I can, that I am. Because many parents do not. They throw their hands up. Historically, many men, when there's a deformed child, they leave the family because they can't take it. They say. But when we can prepare ourselves to do what needs to be done and see ourselves as a helping agent in that process, we are preparing and conditioning ourselves. And then we can have more positive expectations of a positive outcome. The young lady who, and then we'll get you, who draws and paints, and she is what? What's her name?
Johnny.
Whoever had any imagination that someone in her state would end up being able to do that? But somebody invested and continued in an investment and had high expectations and worked her to the point that she began to invest in herself. And we have many, many accounts of that nature. So no, we don't always, I'm not suggesting we'll always be able to turn life conditions around, but our approach to those conditions, which create the stress on us, negative stress, we will be able to bring into elements of control, and with that, experience celebration. And it's a very, very powerful thing. Yes, ma'am.
My question is, how do you know what approach, when to act and when not to act? We have a friend of my son's who's 17, who has had all of a shoulder and arm amputated for cancer. And he's found another spot on another arm. And I guess there's a lot of stress, anxiety, not knowing how to approach that with my son, the reality that he may be gone. He may not go through this and come out of it and live a full life the same as my son will. The loss.
So, your, how you would approach your son?
Yes.
And if it was me, I'd just be honest with him. From all medical knowledge, all the medical knowledge you have, these are the possibilities. And they are real life
openness
things.
And communication.
Yes. Don't try to cover up. Oh, he's going to get, we're better because we're praying for him. If you truly, truly believe in the power of prayer, which works, but if you truly believe it, then tell your son that. But if you don't really believe that, and you're faking it, then no, don't tell him that. But we need to be honest. Kids can handle much more than we give them credit for. Most of the times, we're the ones who can't handle it. It's hard. But we have to be honest. And we have to understand what we're dealing with. And with honesty and understanding, we can begin to prepare ourselves.
Can I ask you something?
Yes, ma'am.
Why? And this is something that has always been a strong feeling with me. When a person, when someone you know, or whether or not you know the person or not, let's say that they die, I have had so many occasions where the person will say, it's closer to them, they passed or they slept away. And then you get the children afraid to go to sleep because they believe if they stretch out, they'll die like grandmother died.
In some cases, it's ignorance. In other cases, it's fear and denial. In other cases, it's conditioning. That's the way in our culture, our family, that we have addressed death. And the Bible talks about death in some examples about going to sleep. Now, if that's all you say to the children, you do set them up for some possible problems. But there's a lot of dimensions to death that we need to be talking to our kids about and talking to each other about that could help us respond to it in a healthier frame of reference so that the trauma, the stress that's created from the fears and the hurt and the loneliness and the absence and the confusion don't take that toll. And a lot of the we have any morticians here? And a lot of the crooked morticians that come in. That's not a joke. That's not a joke. It's a very critical time. And for people who have not prepared themselves for death in their family, they pay out a lot of money unnecessarily. They go through a lot of changes unnecessarily. So to be prepared for things to happen emotionally and have our reliance in Christ Jesus will save us in many respects. And so as opposed to going around with our heads hung down, we can go around rejoicing. Because my Bible tells me to be absent in this old body means to be what?
Present.
And what could be more rewarding for a soldier, as we see in my church, that has gone home? Nothing could be more rewarding. That's the goal. So what's the expectation? What's the understanding? And since death is the issue, what's the understanding of death? What does it mean? How have you processed it? How have you toned up your mind and your body and your spirit to receive it? It's coming. We cannot escape it within our families, and we cannot escape it ourselves. So how have we prepared ourselves, as in Lamont's, for delivery, for death, for the transition? Yes, ma'am.
Well, my husband died last summer, and
I sometimes I cry when I talk, but I'm not crying from grief anymore. But when I was writing the line of the verse, I was kind of hysterical. I was tired and it was pretty rough. So, and it's peace in my mind. I thought, I looked at that casket and I thought, you know, I thought, I love peanuts, but I don't care much for the shells. And that went in my mind, and I started to laugh, and everybody saw it. My son said, what's the matter? I told him, he didn't think I was funny at all. But it was, that's really the way I felt about it. It was gone.
Another technique for affirmations. And affirmations are statements that may or may not be true, but we have a desire for them to be true in our lives. And we can take any negative or unpleasant statement or experience and rephrase that in a positive term, and then reinforce that positive term in our lives until it becomes a replacement of the negative. And it works. It works. It works with children, and it works with adults. But it's an act of the will. An act of the will. An act of your will to be positive. You have control in the degree that stress is negative or positive. Now, some of us like to grieve. We like to have the pity. We like to have people to come in, oh, you poor child. Oh, can I get you some soup or something? No, we like that. We like the attention. And some of us like it, and there's some real reasons why we like it. We didn't get enough of that at some points in our lives. So I'm not saying it's not legitimate, but it's not healthy. That's what we're getting at. So we have power to choose. And we can affirm attitudes and values in our lives from a conscious decision. Whenever you exercise power, usually, whenever you exercise power in a positive way, usually you feel good. Even with your son, when you're able to take the appropriate actions to deal with that moment and bring some comfort, some relief, maybe a brief smile or something to his face, I'm almost confident that the heart just pumped with joy. Yeah. That's power, that's control. It makes you feel good. It may be, in her case, it might be for a moment, but that's celebration. It's not tension, negative tension and stress, because I'm contributing, you know. And we all can do it, but you have to work it.
There's a lot of research done now about the effects on the immune system when they have stress, and there's, you know, a lot of times where people will actually get sick after a stressful situation. And they know that there is medical data.
I do marriage counseling, and oftentimes, and I see it, I'm not saying it's just associated with women, but in my particular area, I see it more with women than men. When it's a clear case that there's going to be a divorce, the woman gets sick. And she'll have pain almost any place. And go to the doctor, because that's the first thing you have to do, since I'm not a medical doctor, and get checked out, whatnot. And there's no indications of any real thing there. Yes, sir.
I work in a pain and distress clinic, and what she was talking about, and we find out too, people come in with chronic pain, of which they have nothing but work for 9 years, 12 years, 8 years, 7 years. And with the process that we do in an integrated program, once you start removing the pain, all of a sudden the emotional pain comes out. The real reason for their pain has been deep inside for a long time. And that's when then they enter into the therapy process as well. Mm-hmm. So there is a big connection between that mind, body, emotion, and spirit.
Much of my stress and pain went away when I gave up the control over the people around me and let half of my troubles went away and their troubles. I were turned over to God and I have not the stress and pain I used to carry.
One of the other scriptures there, I jotted down, it says, my soul waited thou only upon God. My soul waited thou only. That's King James. I love King James. I grew up with King James and I like the language. I know some people find it difficult and old fashioned stuff, but I like it. So whenever I use a scripture, it will be King James. My great big thick Bible is King James. But my reliance is only on God. Not on my control of the family, how I can orchestrate everything. Not on my control of my spouse, not on my control of the people on the job, not on my control of my bank account, because all those things generate what?
Stress.
Negative stress. Because they fight back. Sometimes it's not overtly, but covertly they fight back. And it keeps you busy full time, trying to count up those pennies in the bank, even if they are in the many, many zeros. And it's frustrating. It takes its toll.